You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's August 5th, another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the app or catching us on social media. Later by podcast on Spotify or Apple. We're very happy that you've started your Tuesday right here. I got a question for you. Did you miss Parker Olson? Don't worry. He came back after an extended weekend. He's down there in Madison Studio A2. Welcome back, Mr. Olson. It wasn't much of a vacation. I mean, you were listening to the show yesterday morning.
I was listening. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't listen to me if I didn't have to, but it's the sound that comes out of my pie hole here. So, I mean, I've got to, whereas you did it by choice.
I was here to listen to Greg and Dom more than anything, really. I just wanted to see how they did.
Thanks.
Don't worry.
Thanks.
I'm not here for you.
That. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, great. Very nice. What did you do? You had some extended family time?
A little bit, yeah. So my, I believe it's through my aunt's work, my dad, my uncle, and my cousin were in a golf outing yesterday at the WEA. I think it's the Members Board Foundation had a golf outing that we got to be a part of, and it was a really good time. We had a ton of fun.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was a golf outing. How did you do?
As far as I know, pretty good.
As far as you know?
Yeah. Well, so here
do you keep score or?
So here's the thing. It's scramble. So you all four you hit, you play the best ball.
Okay.
I think we shot 4 under, which is like,
you did
pretty fun. I know we shot 4 under.
Okay.
What I don't know is when they announced who won, they didn't say what the score was. So okay. We don't know if we lost by 1 or if we lost by like 7. We have no idea.
Okay. And just the way you said that, I mean, you probably have no idea who Jack Benny is, much less watch any of his stuff, old-timey comedian. But he just has. They don't even know if we won or lost. It's great. It's perfect timing here. Alicia thought that you were working, noting that you were commenting during the show. She says, on YouTube, I swear he was working. Tony posts up from Ashland. Oh, thank goodness. That replacement guy clearly had no idea what he was doing. Greg, I think his name was. Complete amateur.
We kid because we care.
It was nice to see Greg yesterday.
I had a great time seeing him on the show.
Thank him and Dom for filling in, and glad you made it back with absolutely no idea of how you actually did.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
But it's that you had fun, and that's what counts, right?
It was a very good time. It was so much more fun than I thought it was going to be. It was as good as we could have hoped for. We had a really good time.
That's really what I say anytime about golf, is that it. My only hope is that it turns out more fun than I hope it'll be.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a golfer.
But well, when you're playing best ball of four guys, hopefully there's a good shot.
You would hope. Okay. Here's what's coming up on the program today. The case of Texas legislators leaving the state in order to delay rigged Republican congressional maps is evoking memories of what happened here before Act 10 took hold in 2011, but the similarity actually goes a little deeper than that. States are in these positions of what I call corrupt cartography because right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court a few years back would not step in when Wisconsin Republicans rigged our own maps right here during the Scott Walker administration. You have to wonder if there is a path forward that doesn't involve a race to the bottom when it comes to politicians trampling on the rights of voters who, I mean, all they want is fair elections. That's seriously all it is. It's part of our question of the week in our Sunday newsletter. Should blue states match red states to offset gerrymandering? You can sign up for our Sunday morning newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Also, some progress is being made in Wisconsin communities that want to create a local network to ensure access to high-speed internet service. It's taken a little time because of restrictions from a Republican-led legislature, but in our 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to the mayor of Superior, Jim Payne, the latest hometown to get a project started. Also, last month, America marked 60 years of Medicare and Medicaid as a lifeline for the elderly and vulnerable. And then not long after that, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to ensure racial discrimination would find no place in the future of America's elections. And yet here we are in the future, and racism in elections is back, thanks to a politicized U.S. Supreme Court and an all-out assault by a sitting president on anything resembling racial justice. We're going to talk to Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman to find out how recent events play a role in Wisconsin's elections, too, as we watch the slow dismantling of the Voting Rights Act. Chad Holmes will be along from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. Dan Hagen will be joining us from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander as well. All that coming up throughout the course of the day. And, of course, you can join us as well if you're watching us on social media, on Facebook or YouTube. You can just put a little something in the comment section there. We'll see it and maybe pop it up on screen here like we did for Alicia and Tony. You can also use the Civic Media app. Just go to one of the stations where you're hearing us and click on the text button here, and you can send us a note that way. You can also use the voice note feature and record a little message to us as well. You can also email us. The email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. From meteorologist Brittany Merlot, our state forecast, she says, high pressure is still in place, but the jet stream is shifting. It's shifting our winds to kick up from the south, and that's going to kick out a lot of the wildfire smoke. Hallelujah. However, those south winds are going to start turning things hot and humid for the second half of the week. Partly sunny is the forecast for the state today. Highs in the low 80s, a southeast wind at 5 to 10. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s, a light easterly wind. Just all in all, a really nice, not perfect summer forecast, you know, what with the smoke and everything, but this is mighty darn close to it. This is really a great time to, you know, do your golfing, if yeah. you're a parker, camping, biking, whatever the case may be. It's all good out there this time of year.
It is. It's very nice. So yesterday was really perfect. It was, that smoke is so close to being gone. It's, I can, my fingers are tingling, Pat. I can sense it's almost gone, and I'm almost far happier.
See, now when you said tingling, I thought you were thinking about the Brewers, watching them in Atlanta last night.
I'm tingling because the Brewers.
That was fun. Quinn Priester surrendered a first pitch home run, and you're thinking, oh, well, maybe it was a good run while it lasted. No. After that, he allowed just one other hit, and Isaac Collins hit a three-run homer. That was the difference as the Brewers beat Atlanta 3-1 on Monday night. All-star Trevor McGill picked up his 25th save of the season for the Brewers after pitching a perfect ninth inning. Quinn Priester struck out 4, walked 2, throwing 90 pitches as the Brewers improved to a Major League best 68-44. That is 10 wins in a row for Quinn Priester.
That's
somebody
ridiculous.
Who, if you'd have told me when the season started, that a guy named Quinn Priester would be one of the heroes of the team and pitch 10 wins in a row, I would not have believed you.
No, and especially since he wasn't really somebody, no offense to Quinn Priester, he's not really somebody that I think we wanted. He was more of someone we needed to fill a spot at the time because we had so many injuries at the start of the year.
That's exactly what it was. But he and all these others, Isaac Collins, Rookie of the Month, you know, they've all stepped up.
Yeah.
As they got here. We've made them feel good. We've made them feel welcome. Maybe it was the pocket pancakes. I don't know. The TV guys were making note of that yesterday and saying, you know, what about wallet waffles?
Waffle.
Where does this go from here?
It was something about an egg roll.
Brewers will play Atlanta again this evening and then again tomorrow evening, 5:40. Both evenings, the pregame will get started on Civic Media stations in Hayward and Park Falls, Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh, and Richland Center. I also noted from a couple of different places the delight that Brewers fans are taking in the way the Chicago White Sox are picking up like as many former Brewers as they can. J.R. Radcliffe writes this in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The Milwaukee Brewers have been the best team in baseball for more than 2 months. The Chicago White Sox have not, though they're trying to capture some of Milwaukee's magic by acquiring everybody leaving Milwaukee. The latest move was to claim both of the Brewers relievers who were designated for assignment shortly after the trade deadline, left-hander Brian Hudson and right-hander Elvis Baguero. The White Sox have rostered six other players with recent Brewers ties. And J.R. Radcliffe writes, not since Bud Selig tried to buy the White Sox and move them to Milwaukee in 1969 has there been this much of a pipeline between the two organizations. And in my mind, it predates this, but in my mind, it is all about Aaron Civale. Yeah. Saying, I don't want to, if you're going to put me in the bullpen, you got to trade me. I don't want to be here anymore. Send me somewhere else. Fine, buddy. Go to the White Sox. We'll get Andrew Vaughn, and suddenly he'll kick it into gear.
It's funny how this is tending to happen with Wisconsin sports, and I know that this is an entirely different circumstance, but Aaron Rodgers did the same thing with the Jets.
Yeah.
He brought over like four Packers.
Yep, and it ain't working. It ain't working. It works here. Other former Brewers now with the White Sox include Adrian Hauser, Tyler Alexander, Bryce Wilson, Vinny Capra. So, hey, if you're missing any of these players, you just have to head down the road now, and you can still see them with a team that's not doing so great.
Yeah,
so.
You know what? Maybe Dom really is a Brewers fan because he's a White Sox fan. So maybe he is a Brewers fan, actually.
Maybe. Maybe they're hoping some of that Pope magic will sprinkle on them. Tony writes, if you can't create chemistry, just import it from the best team in baseball. Very typical Chicago, he writes. Roger on Facebook says the White Sox have already surpassed their win total for last year. So, hey, they got that going for them.
Yeah.
You know,
they're doing way better. The White Sox, actually, I think the Brewers, the White Sox, and the Marlins coming into yesterday were tied for the best record since the All-Star break.
Look, I'm just enjoying the ride because I want to put this one caveat in here.
Yeah.
It's great, but... You know, all the national talk is, I guess we have to take the Brewers seriously. Here come the Brewers. Yep. And it's great and everything. But I just want to get out of the first round of the playoffs first before I get any sense of giddiness over here.
I was thinking this morning, I really hope that the Brewers start to scuffle a little bit soon because I don't want them to be ridiculously hot for too long as they have been, I think, now. And then totally go dead bats, nothing to do when they get to the postseason. I'm really hoping they can get hot again during the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to see how they, we saw how they bounced back when they had a rough, first month or so of the season. And I just want to know that they still have it in them, given how many roster changes have come since that time. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy the victories. Don't get me wrong. So there will be a lot to talk about throughout the rest of the show today, of course. We've got today's history lesson coming up where we wish a fond farewell to Lonnie Anderson from WKRP. That and the rest of today's music history news and notes coming up as well. And we are followed later by Matt Nair on Air, Todd Alba. Host of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will be joining Jane and Greg at 9:30 this morning. From the heart of America's Up North, live from Lake Wissota, thank you for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. Powered by Up North News, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
On the text line from Jim in Brookfield saying, good morning, Pat and Parker. My wife and I had a nice day at the state fair yesterday. Outside of the expo building, we ran into, of all people, Congressman Tom Tiffany. I recognized him because of an aide who had a Team Tiffany t-shirt. When I asked if he was going to run, ostensibly for governor here, he said, I'm thinking about it, as he extended his hand for me to shake. When I told him that I do fist bumps, he told me that Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio also does fist bumps. I was not pleased to learn that I had something in common with Jim Jordan. Again, from Jim in Brookfield. Don't worry, Jim in Brookfield. You have a lot less in common with Jim Jordan than a lot of folks, you know, would like to think. Jim Jordan is, you don't want certain things in common with him. There's a part of me that still believes there is justice for people like Jim Jordan, but for now, they're sure enjoying the ride on the MAGA roller coaster while they can. Up North News is a part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom with outlets in several states, including Up North News here in Wisconsin. Podcasts, video series, go to couriernewsroom.com to learn much more. Let me tell you just a bit about this week's new series from Courier Newsroom. There is the video production with Akilah Hughes called How Is This Better? And this week, it's called Trump's Media Takeover is Happening, and it's happening at an alarming rate. Akilah and her guests will break down a chilling wave of corporate capitulation to Trump, including CBS and ABC with multi-million dollar settlements, the abrupt cancellation of Stephen Colbert's Late Show, part of Paramount being on their best behavior ahead of the now approved by Trump's FCC major merger. Akilah Hughes' guests on this latest edition of How Is This Better are Tara McGowan, Courier founder and publisher, and our friend, longtime journalist Mark Jacob. They will explore the failures of corporate media to stand up to Trump and why Americans are increasingly split into the informed and the manipulated. You can subscribe now and follow the show on YouTube. Just go to YouTube at How Is This Better for more new content before brand new fall episodes come out later this year. So watch How Is This Better on YouTube. You can also watch or listen on Spotify. You can listen on Apple, or you can watch it right from the Courier website, and that would be couriernewsroom.com. The other day, I was talking to, I want to say it was Kia Vakil, or maybe it was our weekend review panel. We were discussing familiar names in the news. And we talked about Beto O'Rourke when we were talking about the Texas redistricting. And I suppose that means Beto O'Rourke is going to start making appearances again. Well, it turned out he was making one right in Wisconsin. He was in Wisconsin last Saturday holding a town hall at the Washington Park Senior Center in Milwaukee, part of a series of community conversations around the country held by Beto O'Rourke's voter organization group, Powered by People. Speakers last Saturday included Devin Remiker, the new chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. A lot being said there about the direction that the Democratic Party needs to go in. And as I mentioned before, part of that direction is determining if, in heavily Democratic states, they need to sink to the Republican level in engaging in gerrymandering to offset the, you know, corrupt maps that are being considered right now in Texas. And we'll talk a bit more about that in our next segment. We're also going to continue our discussions throughout this morning and throughout the weeks and months ahead about who Wisconsin's next governor should be and the qualities that make up that governor. But before we get there, there is still plenty that is being said about the current governor, Tony Evers, and whether he, you know, fought hard enough for Wisconsin, for progressive values, for things like that. There was a column by Minocqua Brewing Company owner Kirk Bangsted recently that was titled, Governor Tony Evers, Wisconsin's Savior Who Refused to Lead, and Why Democrats Can't Choose the Most Inoffensive Candidate Again in 2026. Now, anybody that knows Kirk Bangsted knows that he does not have any problem whatsoever attacking Democrats as well as Republicans if they do not meet a certain benchmark the way that he sees it. And he has repeatedly called out Governor Evers. He has repeatedly called out Democratic Attorney General Josh Call. and others. He has certainly called out Democratic legislators. Let's just say there's a reason he doesn't appear at Democratic conventions and things like that. He is an equal opportunity offender. There's a lot of times when his heart is in the right place, when he's fighting for the right cause, but it's the manner in which he does it that rubs some people the wrong way. And this latest essay about Tony Evers, you really saw that reflected in the comment section on Facebook. Now, again, Bankstead has his fans and supporters, but there are also plenty of people this time around who said, you lost me on this one, or who said, you know, I'm still a supporter, but you're completely off base on this one. There was much less, yay, you go, Kirk, in this one, and much more pushback from people that said, what do you want from a guy who's got a gerrymandered legislature dominated by Republicans? For most of his time in office, he had a state Supreme Court that was dominated by right-wing justices. And sure, you can speak up more loudly on behalf of progressive causes, but in terms of actual action, there are a lot of people that think the best thing that Governor Tony Evers did was what he could do, and that was use his veto pen essentially as a goalie stick in hockey and prevent some truly awful things from taking place in Wisconsin that are taking place in plenty of other states. And that, yes, perhaps the next governor needs to be of a different brand, maybe more of a firebrand, maybe a bit more forceful. But as we've discussed here, that may also mean that that particular candidate may turn off enough moderate voters and hand the governorship to the Republican Party. The upshot of it seems to be that people do appreciate Tony Evers. He's never been a political animal. But for what we needed, somebody that could beat Scott Walker and then fend off the worst Republican traits, mission accomplished. The Midwest Farm Report is next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow, of course, we'll have our weekly homeroom segment, and we'll be talking to Denise Gomer Hutchison of the Wisconsin Public Education Network, Laura McCoy of the Green Bay School Board, and Green Bay City Council member Alyssa Prophet on how you can follow their lead right in your own hometown and push for better taxpayer transparency when it comes to the true cost of voucher schools and your property tax bill. So be listening for that at 7:30 tomorrow. Tony reminds us on YouTube this comment, Bernie Sanders would win more moderates and non-voters than the average Democrat, is his claim. He says it's not about where you are on the spectrum, it's how you will impact voters' lives and if you will fight for them. And Tony believes that's what people are seeing in folks like Bernie Sanders and others. So again, your point of view always welcome on Facebook or YouTube. Or again, use the Civic Media app to text us your thoughts as well. All right, for folks who might have missed it in our last hour, or 8 a.m. hour yesterday, Monday, we talked a bit with Sean Fedaplace from Main Street Alliance. That's the small business group that advocates for better public policy for Wisconsin entrepreneurs. We talked a bit about our mutual friend Corrine Hendrickson as a symbol, as she's closing her childcare center, of the struggles facing entrepreneurs in our state and small businesses overall. And I started by asking him to simply affirm that this has not been an easy first 6 months of the new administration for small businesses in our state.
That's right. On January 20th, the day after the Office of Management and Budget dropped a bomb, which was that they were cutting grant programs all across the country. That impacted folks who are Head Start. Here in Dane County, it would have impacted 1,000 families, actually. But we also have a lot of members who were part of programs that benefited from government funding. And so that's been huge. We actually have now sued the administration 7 times because they keep breaking the law, whether it's federal layoffs. They've laid off huge amounts of the SBA staff. They're gutting our civil society. And we're fighting back. Our organization, our members like Corrine, who thank you for all you've done to highlight her story, really are working to make sure that we're holding the administration accountable, and we're holding elected officials like Derek Van Orden and Brian Steele accountable as well.
Yeah, because again, for folks that haven't, we haven't talked about Main Street Alliance for a while here, but you know, this is not your big business agenda here. And between, you know, a lack of access to health care, the child care crisis, rising tariffs, a lot of what's happening through the Trump administration may be good for, say, a Fortune 100 company. But their view of their workers and of what they need from government is not the same as what businesses on Main Street need. And that's a big part of Main Street Alliance's role, is reminding state and federal lawmakers that you've got a whole bunch of members that have a different mindset than the big boys on Wall Street.
That's right. And, you know, it wasn't small business owners standing behind the president like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and others during the inauguration. Apparently, our pocketbooks aren't big enough to be able to do that. And so our membership, we have about 2,000 members in Wisconsin, and they're being absolutely decimated right now, whether it's the tariffs or something that your listeners really need to be aware of, is that a lot of the bad stuff in the big, ugly law that passed, they essentially put the goodies on the front end, like the cuts, and then getting rid of benefits and stuff later on. Medicaid, for example, is one of those programs. However, the enhanced tax credits in the Affordable Care Act marketplace, where tens of millions of people get insurance in this country, those cuts are going to affect open enrollments in November, and the actual cuts go into effect in January. And for many, many folks in the state, that's going to raise their premiums by as much as 97%. It's going to mean tens of thousands of people in our state losing coverage. And we're going to make sure that people know who's responsible for making that happen.
And it's good that you raise that point, that everything in the Trump mega bill is on its own different timeline. When these cuts happen, when these when all these things unfold, there will be ways throughout the coming years that will point back to this Trump mega bill as having that kind of an impact on them. And so that explains why you've been convening, you know, these forums across the country with small business owners, with advocates as well, to tell them that the mega bill may have been signed and everything, but that's no reason to just say, well, I guess that's that, and walk away. There's always action to be done, either to undo this or to fight for something else, right?
Yeah, I think that the first thing is that the Republicans, when they come back from their August vacation to D.C., there are already getting cold feet on some of these cuts on the Affordable Care Act marketplace, because they realize that if tens of thousands of people lose coverage in their districts, or if their coverage goes up by twice what it cost before, it's going to be very easy to point out who did that. Derek Von Orden is a perfect example. Because of the way the marketplace is done, more rural areas tend to get more generous subsidies for technical reasons. And so you could see folks see the premiums go up per year in this district by between $2,000 and $4,000 a year. And that is real money. That is money that folks will not be able to afford. And so looking ahead, I mean, that's going to be something that we're really going to pound the payment on. We've been organizing folks, not just in Wisconsin, but I recently went to Iowa, went to Minnesota. We have folks convening in Virginia, North Carolina, and Michigan through our 1000 Main Streets program to bring people together to learn about this stuff. So we're working to make sure that folks are aware of what's happening and they know how to contact and impact their lawmakers.
While those voices are small, there are so many more small businesses than there are the big ones. And it really is just a matter of helping all of these entrepreneurs understand that putting their voices together, they can fight for these things that should be higher priorities in Madison and in Washington. So you've talked about at the federal level, holding Brian Steil and Derek Van Orden, to account for them. Does that include, I mean, will there be like public events, or is it more just outreach and asking people to, you know, write to their member of Congress and let them know their dissatisfaction with what's happening?
Yeah. So I would say what I would say is for the two of them, to Brian's credit, he did hold a town hall. He got an earful the other day, but at least he held one. Derek is what might as well be the witness protection program. He doesn't show up for anything. And so, I definitely show up when people have public events, write op-ed, write LTE, talk to the local media about how you're being impacted. If you get connected to us, if you get our website and sign up, we've been really at the forefront of the fight against the tariffs and against the healthcare cuts our members have been featured and seen by over 15 million people in the last a couple months across the country on these issues. And so getting into the press, getting into be able to talk to them directly, and then getting involved in local elections.
We're talking to Sean Fedeplace from Main Street Alliance. You can learn more at mainstreetalliance.org. One of the discoveries that small businesses are making, some of them who had been, say, Trump supporters, was thinking that everything that they were saying about tariffs was somehow going to be good news for them because they're a small business. And if more people buy American because of the tariffs, it would be good for them. And I'm picking on one particular business, the Montana Knife Company, because their CEO was so, I think, illustrative of where we're at right now. Taking that view of, oh yeah, the tariffs are going to be great for small businesses, till you realize he's an American manufacturer, yeah, but he's got to import the steel that he's using to make these knives, and suddenly realizing, oh wait a minute, these tariffs are going to hit everybody in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, he also asked for special treatment for his business, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yes.
Considering that, you know, you look at Smoot-Hawley, which arguably helped push us into the Depression. You look at these current tariffs. One thing that was extremely frustrating for me in the early days of like post-Liberation Day and the sort of very chaotic, you know, very, I would say, impulsive announcements that have been made ever since with Besant and Howard Lutnick cheerleading the president's economic illiteracy is that the way this is being done is really dumb. These tariffs, like, there's a time and place for tariffs for national security reasons. China is a bad actor and they've done a lot of things that stealing intellectual property or other things, and there needs to be some accountability there. However, doing a carte blanche 30%, 50% tariff, a lot of profit margins, if you look at Walmart as an example, which is a very big business, right? They have huge production, huge scale. Their profitability is around 6 or 7%. And that has to be disclosed to shareholders. And so if they're only that profitable and you look at 30% tariffs, that the math doesn't math. And so what's been happening is that people have been selling existing inventory. And so they haven't had to jack up prices yet. And they're also in a wait and see period. And if you look at the jobs report that just got released last week, it showed essentially that part of the reason why the jobs data was not good is because so many businesses closed and didn't respond to the survey. And so that shows that this is having a huge impact. It's starting to show them the data, and it's only going to get worse as we head towards the holiday season.
Sean Fedeplace from Main Street Alliance. Great to catch up with you, Sean. Thank you so much. I'm glad you were free today.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. All right. Let's talk about what's happening in Texas now, where Democratic legislators have left the state for a time to call national attention to the corruption coming out of their state capitol as Republicans, on the demand of President Donald Trump, try to rig their congressional map further to squeeze out more Republican districts in a bare-knuckle effort to win control of Congress, not based on whether the voters like them or not, but on how they can move lines the way that Donald Trump uses a Sharpie on a hurricane map. The fact of the matter is, this all comes back to Scott Walker, as so many things do, when you had a series of corrupt Republicans running our state right after the 2010 elections. And let me explain how. Look, gerrymandering has been a thing for a long time in this country. Jess Bidgood has a good article about it in the New York Times and notes that last year, just 8% of congressional races were decided by 5 points or less. But she also notes that a key moment came in 2019 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that federal courts were powerless to hear cases about partisan gerrymandering. Chief Justice John Roberts acknowledged that the results of excessive partisanship reasonably seem unjust, but that ultimately the issue was political and not constitutional. The court washed its hands of the issue and left it to states. The dissenting justices warned that the consequences for democracy could be dire. Justice Elena Kagan wrote, "The practices challenged in these cases imperil our system of government." But with the federal courts now taken out of the business of reviewing partisan gerrymandering, it was up to state laws and state courts to determine what was allowed. And there, Republicans had an advantage. And how did they get that advantage in large part? Yeah, through gerrymandering. So by the 2022 redistricting cycle, Republicans controlled congressional map making in 19 states, while Democrats did so in just 7, according to a 2022 analysis by the Brennan Center. Now, Democrats did aggressively gerrymander in a couple of states, Illinois, Maryland, Nevada, but in several other states where Democrats are in a position of power, including Arizona, California, Colorado, and Michigan, voters have established independent commissions to draw fair maps, which will make it harder to try to cancel out Texas's gains by drawing new maps elsewhere. And that is the sad lesson that we must learn for all of that. For all of the times that Democrats played by the rules and did the things that voters were expected, folks like Scott Walker, Donald Trump, Republican legislators, Republican members of Congress took advantage of that fairness, took advantage of the playing field, and said, well, gosh, if we cheat, we can win this game. And if we convince just enough voters that we're the tough guys and doing this on their behalf, we'll win. And it's worked. Right up until the moment of, say, you pass some kind of a big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill, and those voters start to realize that for all your bluster, you were never on their side in the first place. And maybe that's why all this will, perhaps, come back and bite Republicans in the butt next year. Today's history lesson is up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati,
Cincinnati WKRP. Oh, today is kind of a bittersweet history lesson that we bring you today. Today would have been Lonnie Anderson's 80th birthday, the mainstay of the 70s sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati, died on Sunday at the age of 79 after what the family said was a long illness. She played receptionist Jennifer Marlowe on the series, and the one who was really running things behind the scenes rather than her bumbling boss, Mr. Carlson. The show only ran for, what, 3-4 seasons, but was it made an impression on an entire generation of idiots who went into radio like me. Not Parker so much. Do you even know what it is? I know you haven't seen it because it never ran in reruns or anything.
I've only ever seen from WKRP, the only clip I've ever seen,
of course,
was the Thanksgiving turkey bombing.
The turkey drop, yeah. which is of course a landmark TV episode, and one of those when we're watching it live for the first time, you think you're going to wet yourself. You're like, because you don't expect them to take the tragedy of the Hindenburg and turn it into a failed radio contest promotion. And not only do we not see it in reruns, because most shows have to run like about 5 seasons before they show up in reruns, but also the original series, they played, you know, the actual music of the time that was on the radio. Music rights, as we've talked about on this program, are expensive as they're just crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And so you could not possibly pay for the music rights to run all of this, which is a darn shame. So if folks ever, you know, do get a chance just to, you know, catch clips on YouTube or TikTok or whatever, it's worth your while. It was a nice series, and happy trails to Lonnie Anderson. Let's go to 1957. It was on this day that American Bandstand, a local Philadelphia program, went national when it aired for the first time on ABC.
Thank you. Pat Corpino, 19.
Thank you, Pat.
Eileen Wallace, 20.
Thank you, Eileen.
Bobby Barrett, 19. Thank
you. I don't think that's the clip we were looking for there.
It'll get there.
Myrna Horowitz, 24.
Okay. It will. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what we're looking for.
Oh, no?
Okay. No.
What?
No. I had a 1962 show intro queued up and had it started at the very familiar theme. Well, again, familiar to geezers like me that understand the American Bandstand theme. But, you know, what are you going to do? It was a local Philadelphia show. It would run for 5 years and then head to Hollywood. And it would stay there until 1987. But on that first afternoon, the first song the kids danced to that day was That'll Be the Day by Buddy Holly. All right, on this day in 1884, the cornerstone for the Statue of Liberty was laid at what is now known as Liberty Island in New York Harbor. The first electric traffic light was installed in Cleveland on this day in 1914. And this is the anniversary of the birth of rock and roller Rick Derringer. Rick Derringer, somebody else that we just lost recently, May 26th, he passed away. Of course, his big hit, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, was from 1970. Prior to that, he got started in the music business early. He was the leader of a band at age 17 that was brought in at the last minute to re-record the lead on what would become the 1965 hit, Hang On Sloopy. On this day in 1972, music mogul Clive Davis happened to catch Aerosmith, a nice young band that was playing at Max's Kansas City restaurant in New York on this day in 1972 and immediately signed them with CBS Records. On this day in 1975, Stevie Wonder signed a record deal for what was then the largest contract for a single artist, $13 million. That's a big chunk of change in 1975 to serve 7 years and seven albums with Motown and Tamla Records. The number one song this week in 1978 was by the Rolling Stones. On this day in 1962, Nelson Mandela was jailed by the apartheid government in South Africa for being a political opponent. He would not be released for another 28 years until 1990. Think it can't happen here? Look at this week's headline that the Trump administration is now investigating former special counsel Jack Smith. On this day in 2012, the Wisconsin Sikh temple shooting took place in Oak Creek. After killing six victims, the perpetrator then committed suicide after being wounded by police. Happy birthday to singer Samantha Sang. She is 72 years old today. Her big hit Emotion with the Bee Gees came in the mid-70s. She's a native of Melbourne, Australia. Her birth name was Cheryl Sang. Marsha Brady, Maureen McCormick, is 68 years old today. Country singer Terry Clark is 57 years old today. Oh, let me fix that math on there. Maureen McCormick is 59. Oh my gosh, Marsha Brady is almost 70 years old. That's crazy. Let's see. It is National Oyster Day, which got me thinking, okay, there's oysters, there's clams, there's mussels. They're all kind of in that mollusk section of the menu.
Sure.
I love mussels. I do. When they're made up in a, you know, fried up in just the right way, in like a wine sauce or whatever, yeah. Garlic and butter, so good. So, oysters and clams, I'm going to pass on those.
I've never had any of these.
I suppose not. Here in the Midwest, they're not.
Yeah.
You don't find them anywhere. You know.
And if you do, you might be worried.
Yeah, you might be. So, okay, well, maybe folks will have their own opinion on whether, you know, are they an oyster person, a clam person, a mussel person? What is it? And, of course, it's National Night Out, so there will be events in your communities like Selena Heller talked about in Eau Claire. There's something going on at Carson Park this evening. So much more ahead for two more hours as we do on these Tuesday mornings, powered by Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll have Brittany Merlot's forecast and much more after the 7 o'clock news. Hang around and follow what we do over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.